Blog Talk Radio.
Can you imagine a place where all the trials and tribulations of the world don't exist? It's a real place. Right now it only exists in man's mind, because the reality of it is that until the time comes for you to get there, you can only picture it. So what I want to do is try to give you a sneak preview of it, my perception. Nothing but happiness and peace felt daily. A place where your children and babies can play safely. Where people genuinely believe in being friendly. No such thing as hatred and no memory of envy. With no problems to face every morning when you awaken. You can sleep with doors wide open and nobody will break in. Where love's force field is too solid to be shaken. Where each child grows up to be great women and great men. No depression, no loneliness, and no sad moments. And people full grown who've never heard of being homeless. Where we manifest our gifts and no dream is too distant. And there are no hospitals, the sickness is non-existent. And love perpetuates itself while no child suffers. And treatment of one another's not based around color. And you'll never hear slander come from anyone's tongue. In 100 years old, it's considered young.
In a perfect world, there would be no pain.
In a perfect world,
no stress, no strain.
In a perfect world,
we would all be wise and see the whole world through God's eyes.
In a perfect world,
no war, no crime.
In a perfect world,
we would share one mind.
In a perfect world,
and all we'd see is peace and real L-O-V-E.
Nations wouldn't verbally spar with one another.
No.
Point out flaws or seek to go to war with each other.
Each
person has a place in the purpose destined to flourish. No child is ever hurt or malnourished. Money is worthless. We learn in the most spiritually advanced schools. Everything is done God's way. No man-made rules. And poverty is no longer in man's vocabulary. Erased from human thought, recollection, or dictionary. No dream, the most wonderful thing you've ever seen. Every living being gleaming with infinite self-esteem. And belief in the all-wise ruler and best planner. We walk the planet in the most harmonious manner. Where those who rest in here get uncountable blessings. Total strength, trustworthy with your most prized possession. If a man gives his word, he keeps it with no deception. And a mind full of knowledge is the only loaded weapon.
In a perfect world, there would be no pain.
In a perfect world,
no stress, no strain.
In a perfect world,
we would all be wise and see the whole world through God's eyes.
In a perfect world,
no war, no crime.
In a perfect world,
we would share one mind.
In a perfect world,
and all we see is peace and real L-O-V-E.
This is heaven or the hereafter, the geographical area post-rapture, the book of life's unclear chapter. If it's in the sky, then who derived it? Find someone who's ever died and visualized it, then return here to describe it, since none have carried out that mission. The question isn't if it's real, the question is it a place or a condition? See, heaven has a great description, but men exaggerate and create division, make up written lies and fabricate depictions. So stop imagining and understand the basics. Your placement in a heavenly state is self-created. That old statement, life is what you make it, is a true one. Your old existence, erase it and replace it with a new one. See, years of resentment left your progress restricted. New love can never move into your heart till hate's evicted. And this place that I've pictured, look inside if you're wondering where is it. You don't have to give your spirit up to visit.
In a perfect world, there would be no pain.
In a perfect world,
no stress, no strain.
In a perfect world,
we would all be wise and see the whole world
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is indeed his messenger, and I further bear witness that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, leader, teacher, guide, comforter, and warner in our midst, and it is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to greet all of you once again in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
All right, thank you, and welcome back to another broadcast of Young, Gifted, and Black, and I'm excited to talk about this title, and I'm more excited about the panelists that we have with us tonight, and so I'm going to start with those who have never been on before, but we have a rule that you can come on here one time, but you can't just come on here one time. So I'm going to start with our dear brother, who I believe is from the state that we call the Boot, from Louisiana. It's Brother O'Rell. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Salam, Queen. How you doing?
All right. I'm blessed by Allah's grace, dear brother, and happy belated Savior's Day. And come on front and center, soldier, and introduce yourself and tell us something about Brother O'Rell.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Well, my name is O'Rell Muhammad. You can find me on Facebook at O'Rell Wise God Muhammad. And just a brief history about me. My parents, they joined the nation back in 1996, and this rapid the Million Man March. And as a child, I was approximately 6 years old, and I thought to myself after I been, you know, in the nation for a little while, as I got older, I said to myself that I want to be FOI, because I've always looked at the FOI as being black supermen. And I've always looked up to the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan, even much as a young man. I always wanted to be like him. And I see myself doing great works in the Nation of Islam. And so throughout all the trials and tribulations and everything that life entails, I definitely want to be a part of this great mission. I want to see my people free. I want to see my people justified, and I want to see my people made equal. And so that's why I'm here today as a young man, striving to be upright to him who originated the heavens and earth. And, you know, I'm ready. I mean, I'm ready. Allah, I believe that this right here is, this mission is meant for me. I was born for this. So.
Oh, praise you to Allah, sir.
Man.
Okay, all right. And Brother O'Rell is a part of that distinguished group called the Defenders of Farrakhan, and I've had the pleasure and the honor to hear my dear brother defend the minister, and he is a young man. He's a wise young man. So all praises due to Allah. Thank you for joining us tonight, Brother O'Rell. And, of course, we have with us, Sister Latoya Nervous Neal. And this is her second time with us, sister, but go ahead and introduce yourself one more again.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
And shalom alaikum to my Hebrew brothers and sisters that are listening. I want to make it known that I'm a Hebrew Israelite. What we teach is that the so-called black man and the so-called black woman from the four corners of the earth are the original Hebrews, and that the white man that you see in Israel is not, I repeat, the true Jews. They are the Gentiles, and that the whites you see today are the Gentiles, and that we are the royal priesthood of God Allah. The curses you see today happening to our people, you know, our children being locked up, women prostituting and things like that is because we did not keep the commandments of God as it is written in the scriptures. And it is our job as the royal priesthood to get back into the laws and commandments that God ordained. So that is what we teach.
Yes, ma'am. All praises to Allah. And thank you once again, Sister Latoya, for joining us. And, of course, we have with us someone who is nowhere near a stranger to the Nation Building Network and family. And he is a student representative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So allow me to introduce or present Student Minister Andre Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, dear Queen, and also to those who are on the panel. Let me begin properly in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah who came to us in the person of Master Fuad Muhammad. We believe that he is the great Mahdi, the self-guided one, whom the scriptures spoke of would come in the last day and seek and save a lost people. He came and he guided, he raised up one, he deposited himself within that one, a black man from Sandersville, Georgia, who we now know and recognize to be the exalted Christ, who is at his right hand and is in power. And also to the one that has been shaped and fashioned for this critical hour that we now live in. He is exposing the enemy, and he is predicting the extreme weather that we are all experiencing all over the planet, and who we now know to be that comforter whom the scripture speaks of that will guide us into all truth. He is 80 years old, and he is still on his post, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I would like to greet the listening audience and those who are on the panel as well as the host with the universal greetings of peace. We say it in the Arabic language. Assalamu alaikum. For those who are familiar with me, I am recognized and known on Facebook as Andre Loves Allah. I am a humbled student in the ministry class of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and it's always a pleasure to be on the panel of the Nation Building Network, to have anything to say or to inspire or motivate someone who may be listening that may have some questions that need to be answered or could be answered by Allah's grace and permission. This is what we are taught to do as striving student ministers. So I am ready, honored, and just ready to get started on this subject of freedom, justice, and equality. And thank you, Queen, for having me again on your panel. And as always, I'm always delighted to be on your panel.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. And if I'm not mistaken, you know, I have a photographic memory, and I see someone that I think is who I think he is. Brother Reginald, are you with us? Brother Reginald?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Queen. How you doing? I just was going to listen tonight, but you so found me on in here, huh? Great.
Yeah, out of all these numbers, I memorized your number, so I know that was you. And if you want to listen, that's fine, but I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge you, dear brother. He is my co-host on Thursday night. He's also the host of our Sunday show. So thank you, Brother Reginald X. Wynn, for joining us tonight.
All praise be to Allah and Sister Queen. I am here now, so I am not going anywhere. And let me start off by the proper way in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who is Master Farrakhan Muhammad, the great Mahdi, and I further bear witness that he raised one from among us, the Messiah, the exalted Christ, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I thank Allah even further for allowing the most honorable Elijah Muhammad to teach one of his disciples that is our divine warner, teacher, and guide, and the honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And there are three names that I greet you all with the greeting words of peace and paradise. We say it in Arabic language, assalamu alaikum, and we say shalom. And thank you, thank you, thank you. All of the listening audience in the panel, I thank you all for allowing me to just chime in on this great subject, freedom, justice, and equality.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, I guess now we can go ahead and get started, but let me remind the listening audience before we do that if you have a question or a comment, please press 1 on your dial pad, and we'll be more than happy to take your questions. And, of course, those of you in the chat room, I'll be chatting with you as we go. And I think we have somebody else that is joining us. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jungle.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Queen. So I thank you for allowing me to be on the panel as well, and all the brothers and sisters out there listening.
Okay, well, you're gonna introduce yourself right quick and tell us a little bit of something about you.
I'm known as Jungle Fled. It's pretty much I got the idea from being introduced to Honorable Elijah Muhammad. As I know, he taught about Shabazz being conquered in the jungle. And I just thought about the name Jungle Fled as I was able to conquer the jungle of the mentality that I was in before I was raised. Me personally, I wrote a book also called Assisted Human Advancement. I'm actually stationed in the Bahamas, and I'm here trying my best with these guys here as well. You know, they call me peculiar, they call me strange, but it's all praise due to Allah.
Yes, sir. Well, you keep up the good fight. You keep fighting the good fight, dear brother. And we appreciate your service. Trust and believe that. Okay. We're going to go ahead and get started. And this is a topic that I chose because, of course, after the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's profound Savior's Day speech, it was not anything that was unexpected. But, you know, it wasn't even so much this year, and particularly about what he said. It was about our response. Because when he says or referred to us as the dry bones in the valley, you know, we really are at a critical point where we really have to turn around and look at ourselves. And in my personal opinion, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has been a devout leader, and he has devoted much of his life, 57 years plus of his life, to these teachings. And so when our leadership is removed, which is not the first time, I mean, when we claim leaders, you know, Martin, Malcolm, Mega, you know, Muhammad, you know, we claim these fabulous men and we look to them for leadership and guidance. At some point, we have to start looking at ourselves to bring things into fruition, because that's the only way that is going to happen. And so I titled this show The Road to Freedom, Justice, and Equality, because that road has to be built, and someone has to build it. And so I wanted to talk to, and I tried to get a representative from the Black Panthers on, and I tried to get a Christian minister on, because how I'm looking at this is that it's way past religion now. It doesn't matter what your religion is, what your culture is. This is about us as a people, the original people of the planet Earth. We are in a deplorable condition. And it's going to take all of us across the board, irregardless to what our differences are, there's enough tragedy, hurt, pain, and bloodshed that we share in common. So how do we get across that aisle of faith and culture and come together to build that road to freedom, justice, and equality? And so I'm going to start with you, Brother Orell, and I want to talk to you about the plight of our people. When you look at black people today, and when I say black, I'm talking about the original people. I'm talking about the Native Americans. I'm talking about the Asians. I'm talking about, you know, the Spanish-speaking. I want to talk about, you know, Haiti, Africa, Jamaica, our South American brothers and sisters. When you look at the plight of black people today, what is it that you see, Brother Orell?
Well, at this point in time, dealing with our people, the masses of people, or as Master Farah Muhammad would say, the 85%, I see our people at this point in time not necessarily knowing where to go and how about going in the right direction, only because the 10% bloodsuckers of the poor are still in power. And what has happened is that they have the bloodsuckers have found a way to cause a division between us and cause us to fight with one another, even though we agree with more things that we do not agree on. And once we can realize that we all are the same, we are the same people. We are the same people from God. We are the original people of the planet Earth. If we can only settle on that, settle on the best part of the planet Earth, which is self, then only then we can move forward. Now, I'd like to say this, that, you know, when I go out soldiering, you know, in the streets, I go out, I talk to my people, so on and so forth, oftentimes I find many of my people trying to find ways or trying to find a difference between me and them. You know, I hear some people, they say, oh, well, you know, I'm Christian. You know, I don't really want to, sometimes they'll say, hey, I don't really want to buy the paper because, you know, I'm Christian or things like that. And some people, they think that somehow we in the Nation of Islam are different from them. And I always have to tell them that we're not different. You know, as I'm, like Muhammad said, that every good Christian is a good Muslim, and every good Muslim is a good Christian. And the thing about, and I can only speak from personal experience, but the thing about the Nation of Islam is that we're taught that the original man is the Asiatic black man, the maker, the owner, the creator of the planet Earth, God of the universe, which means that there should not be any type of barriers or divisions between us. And that is the quintessential part that is causing a difference between us and it's caused a fight with one another. And the question I always ask is, why are we fighting? We have a greater purpose in life, and we have a greater enemy that's trying to hold, and that is holding us all down. And as like Muhammad said during, it was a Savior Day lecture, he said that, you know, I don't care what you believe. He said, as long as you're black, you're my brother, and I love you. So this came from his mouth. And only if more of us can think like that as a whole, that I don't care what you believe, we still are brothers regardless of what you believe, your philosophical belief systems, your theological belief system, whatever it is, we still need to find a way to unite. And I believe that the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, especially after this past Savior's Day, has definitely exemplified that. You know, when he brought up Dr. Khalid Muhammad, he brought up Malcolm X, brought up Marcus Garvey and all of our leaders, and he paid homage to them and showed respect to them because he understands that his time is not going to be, he's not going to be here much longer. So what he's trying to do, and he understands that the enemy is going to, after he leaves, is going to try to cause a bigger wedge between all of us because he wants to continue to stay in power. So what the Honorable Mr. Farrakhan is doing, what I believe that he's doing, is he's trying to unite us with a great unity. And one thing that he's trying to unite us on is, as we all know, is economics. That's one thing that we all can agree upon, is that we need to be able to support ourselves. And this is, and of course, he got this from the great teachers, the most honorable like Muhammad. So we as a people, we have what we need to build a great nation. It's already here. We already have the skills and the talent. We have everything that we need. And in my humble opinion, if we just get behind and support the Honorable Mr. Farrakhan and what he's trying to do, we can see what we all want is freedom, justice, and equality being carried into fruition, which is what the vision of Master Farah Muhammad and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is. So I can see that if we unite and support the minister, then we can, then we will be able to see ourselves moving forward as a whole. So I hope that answers your question, beloved. Sister?
I'm sorry. I'm just running my mouth and my phone is on mute because I'm trying to keep my keyboard quiet. And I'm just, okay, I'm sorry. Brother Mr. Andre, I was calling on you for your opinion. Yes, sir. But same question.
Okay, yes, ma'am. Thank you for that question.
And thank you, Brother Orrell. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, beloved.
We, the minister, you know, after his Savior's Day speech this year, one of the ways that the enemy will come at us, well, first of all, in one of his lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done, the minister spoke on how a certain section of the people, namely the Jewish people, have shaped the minds and the ideas and the attitudes of the masses of the people. And one of the ways that they will use or try to use against us is how we view Master Farah Muhammad and our differences and how and our ideas and concepts about him, the way that some of us believe who he is. Some of us believe that he was the founder of the Nation of Islam, which is true. Some of us believe that he is God, which is true. And some of us believe that he is the black God. All of these ideas and concepts are true. But the enemy will use the differences amongst these concepts to try to cause a division amongst us. When we say about attitude, the Jewish people have conditioned or they have shaped the attitudes of the minds of the people. Well, what is an attitude? An attitude, according to the dictionary, is defined as a manner, a disposition, feeling, or position, etc., with regards to a person or a thing. Well, when you notice the attitudes of the people on a daily basis, what do you see? Do you notice the original or the true attitude of the people? Or are the attitudes that we notice on a daily basis or come in contact with influenced by a movie, a television show, or a music video? Because this is what we see mostly in the attitudes of the people that we come in contact with on a daily basis. It's not influenced by something that is original or true in their nature. It is influenced by something that they have seen on television, in a movie, or on a music video. If you look at the attitude of people, you would notice that most times. So if that is the case, then what is wrong with the attitudes of the people? Who influenced that attitude? In the Holy Quran, in the fourth chapter, the 26th verse, Allah instructs us that, and I will read shortly, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Allah desires to explain to you and to guide you into the ways of those before you. And I'm going to stop right there. Well, those before us, well, who was that? Who were they? To guide us into the ways of those before us? Well, it can't be talking about the ancestors that we know of in our recent history. And it's definitely not talking about those who are enemies to us. So it had to be talking about, or it has to be talking about, a people that came before those who had a knowledge of themselves, who had their own attitude, who didn't use the attitude that they were influenced by, if they seen on television or something. These people had the original attitude or the nature in which they were created, which came from the Creator. And this is what the minister is doing now when he tells us to read the 37th chapter of Ezekiel, when it's speaking about how he will take the stick of Judah and the stick of Ephraim, and he will bind them together. This is what the brother Aurel just spoke about when he's utilizing or bringing or uniting us with the Black Panther Party, Malik Shabazz. You know, when he was bringing up the Khalid, and he was talking about Malcolm, and he was talking about Imam Warf Dean Muhammad. All of these people, according to the media, were enemies of the minister. But the minister said, well, y'all don't, you don't direct my attention away from what is best for me. So what he's showing them is that regardless of what they see or what they think, he still loves them, and he wants us to do the same thing. Because when you bind those sticks together, as is spoken of in Ezekiel, then all of that hate, all of that division will come to an end, or it should come to an end. So I think it has to deal directly with the attitudes that we see in the people. In the Holy Quran, Allah tells us, or he speaks about attitude when he says that he would change not the condition of a people until they first change themselves. So he's telling us now it's we have to change our condition by the changing of our minds. This is the reason why we see the extreme weather that we're seeing or we're experiencing. And it's not just here in Michigan. It's all over. It's on the West Coast. It's in the East, on the East Coast. It's in areas that significantly don't see snow, but they are starting to see snow now. So what does that tell you? That's telling you that we are in the end time. And that he is commanding the winds is the reason why he said command the winds. He's commanding, or he's predicting this extreme weather to wake our minds up, to let us know that God is present. This is not something that we are used to seeing. All of the extreme weather that we are seeing now is predicated upon the minister letting us know that God is angry and that he's present and that he's going to change the condition of those who are supposedly be in power. All of that's coming to an end now. He also said in one of his lectures that the white supremacy was the nail in the coffin of white supremacy happened when they killed Trayvon Martin. So all of these things are coming to an end. So it is the attitude, I think, that has to be changed amongst our people now, so very important, because this is a critical hour that we're living in now. There's no time for excuses. There's no time for lack. There's no time for just hanging around. Now is the time that we have to show and prove We have to just, you know, it's not a thing of those we just say, we're talking. You got to make it happen now. You know, because if you don't, you're going to fall behind. You're going to lag. You're going to end up like the those in the enemy spot. You're going to go down with them. And that's just not, we're not sugarcoating anything. This is because the minister didn't sugarcoat in his message. He told it just like it is and just like it's going to be. And we have to be the same way. So that is my answer to that question. And I hope I wasn't too passionate. But when you start speaking about this particular freedom, justice, and equality, there's no room for excuses. So you have to be passionate. That's just my take of point. That's my opinion. And I hope I didn't offend anybody. And if I did, oh, praise be to Allah. Thank you, sister, for that question. That's my answer to that question.
Yes, sir. I'm pretty sure no one was offended. Okay, I want to give Sister Latoya.
Yes.
You know, I want to get your take, especially being a black female,
mm-hmm.
a black woman. When you look at our people, what is it that you see?
Well, one of the causes of our people, you know, being in the situation we're in, we're not stupid. We all know the reason behind it is because of the white man. You know, he has taught us, I'm sorry, I have to make it plain, you know, because he has taught us to hate ourselves. He has dumbed us down. You know, brother, I can't think of his name, Jamal was saying last week, that you notice every black neighborhood, you see a liquor store, you see a McDonald's and pharmacies and all of these things that's killing a black man and a black woman. And also outside of the U.S., you see the Africans bleaching up their skin now. We've never seen that before. You know, it's definitely because of the white man. That's one of the reasons. Number two, the black man and the black woman has never been taught to self-love themselves, you know, and I thank the FOI for going outside preaching that word, and my Hebrew Israelite brothers preaching that word, teaching our people about themselves, that they are the original people, that we are the royal heir of God. You know, we need to get back into keeping the commandments. I can't sugarcoat that either. You know, Deuteronomy 28 specifically talks about the curses also, what he would do to his royal people if they do not keep the commandments. And we're seeing that today, our children 16 years old being locked up, you know, women being the head of the household. The scriptures talks about all of these things. So, you know.
Okay. And Brother Jungle, did you have a comment that you wanted to make on that? Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Oh, sorry,
yes.
My phone's on mute as well.
That's okay.
yes, I do, Sister Queen. My humble opinion is that according to what I've learned from teacher Elijah Muhammad is that the first take was ourselves as black Aboriginal people, that we were the first problem, and what we had to do is graft what was in us into the physical world to get a better perspective of our problem. And that resulted into the white man being our eternal problem, reflecting us physically as an outside problem,
mm-hmm.
so we could attack it more direct with more clarity versus than having to go within self. And they have done a great job, and they play their role perfectly, because that's the whole purpose of it. And because of them playing their role perfectly, now we have a better understanding of self, and that allow us now to make the correction that need to be made. So, as far as I'm concerned, they're just playing their role. Nerol is so played to the T that they don't have no other choice but to be against us, because if they decide to integrate, they'll be wiped off the planet. So by nature, they have to be against us. Because if they're not against us, then they're actually against themselves by nature. Because if we blend being a dominant and they're recessive, they'll be finished. So that's just what they have to do to, in order to survive. So now, since we is able to give them their time of 6,000 years, be able to analyze it, Honorable Elijah Muhammad was raised for Master Muhammad to teach amongst us, and we realize what the actual cause and the problem is, and their time is up. Now they probably are at the point that they're just trying to help self-survival. So that's pretty much at the state they're in right now. So they did their job, what we decided to take them out of us, so we could see the reflection of ourselves that's within us in the physical world to get a better understanding. Now their time is up. That's about it.
Yes, sir. All praises due to Allah. And Brother Reginald, you have a comment for us on this issue?
Yes, ma'am. Can I just get the question one more time so I can be correct in answering it, please?
Well, I just wanted to see from your perspective of when you look at our people, what is it that you see?
Well, well, according to what everybody's saying, the bottom line and the common thread that I've noticed, especially what Brother Andre, Student Minister Andre Muhammad was saying, as well as the Hebrew Israelite sister and also the brother that just spoke, is our common thread is the five letters, U-N-I, unity. You know, we need to unite as one. Regardless of your faith persuasion, regardless of where you're standing on your truth in the conscious community, regardless of what religion you claim and you practice, and regardless of whatever you may believe, but as mentioned in the lecture of Savior's Day 2014, which was the theme was, how strong is the foundation? Can't we survive? And in the backdrop, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan presented us with all of the pioneers that came before us that we walked across the bridge of, and we are now on their shoulders. And as he mentioned, once we pass and the new generation comes up, the new revolutionaries, and preferably they won't have to be revolutionary because the kingdom of God will have come. But if so, we have to be the ones that they stand on our shoulders and continue to evolve this struggle for liberation, salvation, and resurrection of the black man and woman, child, and all of humanity who wants to see peace, freedom, and justice set in the earth. So we must all come together, all persuasions. It doesn't matter. We all call them by different names. Jah, Elohim, El, Jehovah, Allah, some who want to worship Jesus, they even, you know, want to call him Christ. But the name isn't important because the name is just a title. And titles are great, but when God was talking to Moses in Exodus, when he told Pharaoh, he told Moses to go tell Pharaoh to let his people go. And Moses was like, in so many words, and I'm a modernizer, wait a minute. You want little old me to go talk to big old Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to let these children go, his children, the children of Israel, go. And what God told him, because, see, that's parallel to what is going on today in America. We are the children of Israel. Like the sister said in the beginning, we are the original. That Caucasian that you see over there, holding down Jerusalem right now? Well, see, Jerusalem is going to be destroyed anyway. We're not worried about that, especially if they want to be over there like the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan quoted. They over there having gay parades in the holy city. Now, that's just total disrespect. Total disrespect. So we don't even want to have to claim that. But there's a new Jerusalem coming up out of the sky.
Yeah.
And it's coming, and there's a pharaoh over here, right over here in the west right now that's holding our children hostage, killing our children, standing their ground. But Moses said, who should I tell them sent me? And God simply said, I am that I am. So if God says, I am that I am, and we are children of God, the Most High God, and Jesus didn't even call his name in our Father prayer, Jesus just said, hallowed be thy name. And we know that he's the beneficent, the most merciful. See, all of that is important. So we all divided over names and persuasion, you know, but Muhammad would have embraced Jesus. Jesus would have embraced Muhammad. Muhammad would have embraced Moses, Abraham, Noah, all the prophets, messengers, and servants of Allah and God Almighty would have embraced each other. So we have to do the same. We got to embrace each other because it's a fight going on right now. And it's a fight that we must win. And if we don't unite, because it's an old saying, united we stand, but what? Divided we fall. And we don't want to fall based on, because we don't want to, because of little titles and names. We want to win this war against Satan and not be partakers of her sins and plagues. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Thank you, Brother Reggie. Thank all of you for your comments, because everybody has a different perspective. But I want to add something to everything everyone said. You know, we so often, you know, we refer to ourselves as black people, and of course we all are black people, but I want the listening audience to understand that we are talking about the original people of the earth, because this Caucasian man, just putting it bluntly, has destroyed or disrupted the lives of every other race of people on the planet Earth. He is easily identifiable as someone who is contrary to Allah and the way and the life that Allah desires for us. Mm-hmm. And all across the board, you know, I hear oftentimes, just in general conversation, you know, I don't like the Africans, the Haitians are this, the Dominicans are this, the Cubans are this, that and the other, the Mexicans, the Latinos, whatever they want to call them, they're, you know, all the differences between us. And the one thing that was very profound that the minister really identified in his character, as he did pay homage to Dr. Colin and Malcolm, and I heard someone say, I saw someone post that the minister has sympathy for the hypocrite. And they were referring to that point when he acknowledged, you know, Malcolm and Warthy Muhammad and Dr. Colin and things of that nature. But they have a tremendous contribution to the nation, and they made tremendous sacrifices. And so when we look at one another and say, you know, we have differences for whatever reason it may be, not the silly nonsense that I don't like you because you have an accent, I don't like you because your skin is darker than mine or your hair texture is different from mine, but even when we have what we call beef in our own community, we can't ever move past that to work on the common problem. And that is our shortfall. That is our downfall right there, is not being able to move past the BS and really deal with the issue. I mean, I might not like you for whatever reason. I might not like what you did or what you said to me. But, brother, we both down here in the trenches. We both starving. Our children are being killed. We are both impoverished in our community. We have a common problem in spite of any differences that we try to name. And that's the nonsense. And the second thing I want to talk about is our economics. And I'm going to go back to you, Brother Orel, because now we're living in a time where there are no jobs. There really are no jobs out there. And so the minister has been telling us, well, the messenger started telling us a long time ago what you got to do for yourself. But now The time is critical. So there are no jobs out there. But look at the talent that we have in our community. We have artists. We have all these people who are just have all these skills. They're not necessarily trained in a school or whatever. We have all these brilliant minds. And then we are the most deprived, the most starved, the most undereducated, or the most underscholared, because some of us really don't need a white man's piece of paper or approval to say that I have this skill and I have mastered it. But when you look at the creativity used in the distribution of drugs in the community, when you look at the creativity behind prostitution, when you look at the creativity behind gun smuggling, then these young minds really have the ability to run corporations. The skills are just being used in the wrong way. So I'm going to ask you, in your opinion, Brother Aurel, how can we enhance, or how can we grab up those skills that we have and do something better for ourselves by the first step being encouraging our young people to use their talents elsewhere? So what would you say to our people? It doesn't matter if they're young or old. What would you say to our people about our abilities to come together and do for self?
Right. Well, I would like to deal with the first thing that you mentioned, and that's about when Donald Mrs. Farrakhan brought up Warfdeen Mohammed and Dr. Khalid and a comment that the person made regarding him doing that. And I want to speak on that first. May I, sister?
Absolutely, dear brother. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, yes, ma'am. Yeah, because I want to speak on that because we must realize, one thing that we must realize is Donald Mrs. Farrakhan is a very, very wise man. He's a great strategist. You know, he's a chief. He's a general, and he's making these moves because, as I said in my initial statement, that he understands that he's not going to be here amongst us much longer. So he knows that the enemy right now, he's trying to devise a plan to have us cause bloodshed amongst our own community. And so what he's doing is that he's trying to break down the barriers between, and if you haven't noticed that the primary people that he spoke about, of course, he spoke about Prophet Noble Jali and Marcus Garvey, people like that. But, you know, he spoke about Malcolm X, Imam Warfdeen Muhammad, and Dr. Khalid Muhammad. And a lot of people settle on the worst part of them or even much based on the incident instead of the best part. And so what he's trying to do is that, in my humble opinion, he's trying to cause us to look at them in a better light because he does not want us to be fighting with each other after he departs, because he knows that that's what the enemy is trying to do. He's trying to halt or slow down our liberation by putting up these YouTube videos, the FBI and the CIA trying to put up these YouTube videos about causing a war between Imam Warfdeen Muhammad and Honorable Mrs. Farrakhan, or between Malcolm X and the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, or so on and so forth. And so he's paying respect to these people because, you know, they have contributed to the liberation of our people greatly. And we should never forget that. We should never be ungrateful for the great things that they have done. And so what he's doing is that he's saying that put your petty differences aside and look at the great things that these great men have done for us. And so he's leading by example, and that's the most important part, is that
he's not speaking ill about them, as many of the followers of those community, or even as those leaders have spoke ill about us. So what he's saying is that, how about we unify with each other, we put our petty differences aside, we unify with each other, and we move forward. Because that should always be the goal. The goal should always be to move forward. A lot of people, and I can be guilty of this as well, but, you know, we think about the past, what someone has done in the past, and we never move forward. And what happens is that it slows down our progress, because we make greater progress if we all just simply work together. So he's leading by example. You have to realize that. Now, dealing with your second question about economics and about the youth, is that one thing that we have to realize is that our people will never truly be liberated under this Eurocentric paradigm, this educational system. And if our children are spending 8 hours a day or more in the public food system, and it is not meant for our people, our youth, to be able to take their skills, talents, and gifts and utilize those to benefit our own people, that is mainly that the whites, they want to take our skills, gifts, and talents, especially from the best of us, and they want for us to use those things for their purposes, for their plan. And so one way that we can do this is that we have to set up our own educational system as independent of this European school system. That is very, very important, because as long as we will remain in this school system, we will always be subjected to the European powers, because it's never meant, their school system is never meant to cause us to become a liberated people. And so we have to spend more time teaching our youth. We don't spend enough time. We allow the enemy to spend more time teaching lies to our young people than what we actually bring to them. So what happens is that our young people, their entire mindset, they start to think robotically as the white man wants them to think, which in turn causes us not to be able to progress as a people. So it's very, very important that what we do is that we take our children out of these school systems. We have to unify. That's the older people must put their and our differences aside and create our own school system so we can be able to spend more time teaching our young people what we want them to know. And if we spend more time teaching our young people about economics and business, then when they get older, they will automatically have that mindset. So, but the enemy, all they pretty much teach us is, you know, memorization and regurgitation. And it's not, and we can see it's not getting us anywhere. So if we mapped out a plan to be able to teach our young people the science of business, starting from when they're little toddlers, we have to take them while they're young. We have to mold them into whatever we desire them to become. But we don't spend enough time with them. We don't spend enough time educating them. When they come home and when we come from work, we don't really want to spend much time teaching them, because, you know, we have all these obligations and duties. So we have to be able to design our own education paradigm and also how God wants it to be. How the European has his has everything set up, his government set up, is not how God wants it to be. It's not how God ordained it to be. At least not for us. Maybe for them, but not for us. So we have to take them when they're very, very young, very small, even with, like between the ages of 2 and 5, because that's when their mind is most susceptible to information. And we just take them and we nurture them and we cause them to grow. But we, as older people, we have to settle our differences. We must stop fighting with each other because our future depends on it. And that's what the Honorable Minister Farrakhan is trying to get us to realize, that us fighting with each other is getting us nowhere. So we have to stop attacking other people, other black leaders. Allow them to do what they want to do, but don't attack them. Let them do their work. And if they don't want to unify, then, you know, let them do what they want to do, but don't attack other people. It's not necessary. It's not going to get us anywhere. So we must definitely take our young people, mold them, remove them from the enemy's education system, and teach them the science of business. Teach them how to be entrepreneurs. Take them out into the community and show them how to do it. Lead by example. You know, start off with small business. You know, have them making money doing little small things. And then when they get older, they can see the big picture. And so then they will be inspired by what the example that you have set, and then they, on the basis of that, that will cause them to want to do greater things. So we must lead by example. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you, dear brother. And I want to skip right quick to Brother Jungle, because you're in Jamaica, right?
In the Bahamas, sister, in the Bahamas.
In the Bahamas. You're in the Bahamas. And
yes, yes.
In still in the Bahamas, which is outside of traditional America, you know, in the islands or whatever, what is the socialization like amongst the people in the Bahamas, the black people in the Bahamas?
Well, over here, the dominant belief system, or may I say religion, is Christianity. And if you do not speak on the terms of Christianity, the first question it asks, if you believe in God. And you could be there all along talking about God, but if it's not on the terms of the Trinity, the first question be asked, do you believe in God? As soon as you don't answer a direct answer as yes versus a breakdown answer to clarify what is God and, you know, the full understanding of it, it cuts off. No more conversation. So that's like, it's amazing how the ignorance is here. So you got to be very careful on how you come off and speak towards anyone here. Because it is very, very strong, very.
So, and what is the economy like for black people in the Bahamas?
I mean, the economy, like, you know, America economy is bad, it affects the whole world. We pretty much have our own prime minister that runs it, and to me it's not properly run, but you know, that's an opinion to everyone. Depends on the position you're in. I feel that the economy is more affected by the belief system, like I said, which is Christianity. If you say you pray and then a spook is coming down and give you something, so you're going to just stay there and don't do nothing. So the economy will not be as good because you're not actually taking the initiative to go and actually do it yourself. Allowing the God within you to move inside your head is more, I believe, and I can make it. I mean, if you have a job, obviously you got to work. You have a job. but the guys them do not really push or create their own. Like me myself, I go out and actually try to create things. So when I do something, I'm more highlighted because they feel like, okay, it's not normal for someone to just go and try and make something happen. Like one of the things I did, I've noticed the women here, over here locked in all of their vehicles. I do a little automotive work, and I decided to do like a free seminar to give them some education on the vehicle, and that have never been done. So I'm like the pioneer in doing something like that. So they're like, wow, this guy, you know, he's just doing something. Because they are so laid back in the Christianity mindset that God just can do it. Not saying that it doesn't happen, but of course, it happens through your actions.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, and Brother Andre.
Yes, ma'am.
Brother Minnesota, okay. I want to get your opinion real quickly about our economic, because you know it's coming to a point now. I think it's been 2 months now that the unemployed have lost their benefits.
Oh, right. Right.
That is the evidence that America is really breaking down. You know, they're really, when the government shut down was, I think it was a pre-trial, you know, to what is really going on. So now the unemployed have been without benefits for 2 months, and of course, there's no job creation really going on. And so what is the state of our economic, well, we already know the state of our economic situation, but what are the key solutions in really pulling our human resources and making some, you know, money for ourselves? I mean, we already have the economic blueprint, but that's a 3-year program. But we got people who need food, clothing, and shelter now.
Right.
And so how do we best, you know, rise above that condition today and move forward? And especially with our young people, because our young people are at the height of the poverty rate.
Right. Well, first, let's deal with the facts, because you know when you start talking about creating jobs and the unemployment rate, let's look at some of the facts. When you talk about everything bad, black folks are at the top. When you talk about unemployment, black folks are at the top. When you talk about obesity, black folks are at the top. High school dropout rates, black folks are at the top. Teenage pregnancy, black folks are at the top. Being a renter instead of a homeowner, again, black folks are at the top. So when you speak about those things about creating good jobs, when you look at the statistics of black folks in every category that I just mentioned, they are all at the top. So there's a problem in each one of these categories. You look at how they use sport and play as a means of diverting our attention away from what's really going on. I think a few years back, one of the major baseball or football stadiums was destroyed by a natural catastrophe. It messed the stadium up or something. But they spent, I think it was a little over $1 billion to to refurbish the station, or either I think they bought a new one or built a new one, tore the old one down and built a new one right in the same spot, something like that a few years back. And in the same city, you have people that have lack of proper housing, you have poor education, you have an unemployment rate that's very high, especially among the darker peoples. You have prostitution and teenage pregnancy, 13 and 14-year-old boys and girls becoming parents at that age. And this is a problem. And it's because of lack of proper education. And it's because we don't have those necessary resources in place that will allow us to build economically. When you look at the Nation of Islam and the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what he set up for us, he set up for us a guaranteed program that if we was to pool our resources together as people, that we could build our own hospitals, our own supermarkets, our own everything that we need, but we have to pool our resources together, even our own schools. And there's an example of that in the Muhammad University of Islam. Their own schools. If you look at the Nation back when the Messenger was still here, he had his own trucking company. He had his fish coming in from across the water internationally. They had their own barbershops, their own factories, and the believers were employed. They didn't have to go to outside of the Nation to get a job because the jobs were there. They were here. They were in the Nation. And my answer to that question would be that we have to pool our resources together. Stop being divided. You know, as the minister used an example of letting us know and understand that he still loves Dr. Khalid and he still loves Malcolm and Imam Wahdeen Muhammad, despite their differences. And that's what we have to, as a people, in order for us to unify, as a people, we have to let go of those differences that we have amongst ourselves, because it's not time for that now. You know, this enemy he's developed a system that has degraded us and desecrated us so long ago, we don't even want to unite amongst ourselves anymore. We don't care. We've gotten to the point that it's, you know, that's their problem. Or it ain't my problem, so I'm not worried about it. And that's the cause of it. But you don't see them talking like that amongst themselves. They always unite and come together. But it's us. They've instilled within us a hate amongst ourselves that we can't, like crabs in a bucket. We see somebody getting up, then we want to pull them back down. And that's a problem. It's always been a problem amongst black folks. But we are at the top of everything bad. Everything bad, we are at the top of it. Most of the things that are good, we are at the very bottom. We're so close to the bottom until you don't recognize it. Nobody recognizes it. So, there again, we have to utilize our education. The education that our youth are receiving from these schools need to be brought back to us, not given to a world that's already falling. Because they don't even have jobs for themselves. So the jobs that they do have, they're not going to give them to us. They're going to give them to their own people. And when they start running out of jobs, then that's when you're going to start seeing all of the chaos. So we have to unite. And this is not something that we just lip professing. This is what the minister has been trying to get us to understand for so long. That this is not a time for us to make excuses or lip professing. Oh, yeah, that sound. No, it's not about sounding good now. It's not about that. It's beyond that. It's past that. Those are the old days. There's no such thing as just lip profession. Oh, yeah, that sounds good. Clap your hands. This is what the minister always tells you. Don't clap your hands. Listen to what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Because if you clap in your hands, you're going to miss the message. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to be beyond just event Muslims, going to Savior's Day and the Holy Day of Atonement to be seen and be amongst the believers. No, I understand that's good. But those times we got to come together more often than that now. We got to unite as a nation, not just at those times, but all the years, all year round. It's beyond that, just the event thing now. So this is the problem. Once we get away from joining or coming to an event and looking at this as a dire need for us as a nation to grow, then I think that will cause... that will solve the problem. In the Holy Quran, in the 6th chapter, I think it's the 126th verse, Allah tells us that whomsoever he intends to guide, he expands his breast for Islam, or he expands his breast for submission. He expands his breast to submit his entire will to do the will of God. And until then, then it's always going to be a problem with us, because if we can't unite amongst ourselves and we're always going to be divided, then we're going to go down with the enemy. And that's what the minister is telling us now, that we have to move beyond our differences now. It's past that. There's no such thing as, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm Orthodox Muslim. No. We got to get beyond that now. We are a nation. This is what Master Farah Muhammad came. He came and called us a nation. He didn't come call us just black Muslims. He didn't come call us the nation. The Orthodox Muslims, he called us the nation of Islam. He didn't say nothing about we divided. So we have to get past the simplified or the immature. In the message, it teaches us that baby language would not be tolerated. Most of us are still speaking baby language. We haven't even gotten beyond that yet. This is why we're still divided as a nation. But I don't want to take up too much of your time, Sister Queen. And, you know, that, like I said, when we start talking about the economic, everything that we look at that's prone for us as black people, we're bad. We're at the top. Everything bad. And that has to change. It really does. It does have to change. So that's my answer to that question, dear sister. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Okay, and Sister LaToya.
Well, to answer that, sis, you notice in the school system, they don't teach you about how to create your own business. Like the brothers were saying, why continue to have the enemy teaching your kids? And, you know, the first teacher of your child, it starts with the mother. You know, the woman is the child's first teacher. And you notice in the school system, listen to what they're teaching them. Christopher Columbus is the first person to discover America. We all know that's a lie. It was a black king that, you know, founded America. You know, they're teaching Cleopatra. There's a white woman, Elizabeth Taylor, looking, have her looking like that. We all know Cleopatra was a black woman. So, again, we have to, you know, be the teachers in the home, take up time with our children, teaching them their self-worth, teaching them how to create businesses and things like that. You know, that's just, you know, part of the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And you know, but the thing about it is this. It's not like we don't have money.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do. And we sink billions of dollars into this economy every year. As a people, we do. And the Million Man March in itself had a profound effect on the economy of America, because if you can recall that day, the instruction was that we were not to spend any money in any white establishment on that day. And though not reported, it was evident that America's economy was profoundly affected by those that just did not participate. Now, I know there were some who, you know, disregarded it, but those that did participate, there was a great impact on our economy and what we put into it. And when I say we, I meant the American economy. So we have money. And what I want to say to the parents is that, you know, the same parents that shake their head and say, oh, well, that's a damn shame that this child got killed over these Nikes or these Michael Jordan tennis shoes, you are the same parent that gave your son or your daughter the money to go purchase those.
I want to add something real quick. You just brought up something, sis. You notice last year, December, the Jordans came out. It was around Christmas time. You notice every teenager was out around from 11 o'clock, no, not 11 o'clock, I would say around 12 o'clock in the afternoon, all the way up to like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, laying on the streets, sitting outside in the cold, daughters also out there, I say about the age of 12, 13, 14, 15, you're laying on the streets and in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
just sit outside for some sneakers that would be out of date within the next 3 months and do the same
mm-hmm.
thing, routine over and over and over, and the sneakers was like $150, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They invested $150 on a pair of sneakers, just one. One pair of sneakers. They could have took
mm-hmm.
that money and invested in either their education or starting their own business. What does that say about
right.
you?
Right. And see, and that's what I'm saying. That's what's going on with the youth. Because they're learning it from the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are, you know, I'm not ashamed of my age. You know, I'm almost 50. I'm a grandmother of one and the mother of three adult children. And, you know, I have to say that I really miss the old days where we parented our children. Because let me tell you something. When you give your child these expensive materialistic things, they have nothing to look forward to in the future. And what happens is that you set a standard that they may or may not be able to continue on their own. And then when that dissatisfaction sets up, that's when they start robbing, they start killing, they start doing whatever they need to do to get back to that comfort zone, because that adjustment for a young mind is very, very critical, very hard for them to deal with that. And the first thing a parent wants to say is, well, you 18, I'm not taking care of you no more, get out of my house or whatever. But you let society or this white racist system tell you when your child is an adult. Your child is an adult when they are mature enough to go out and make a life for themselves. That's when your children are grown.
Mm-hmm.
But we allow this system that they've set up to gauge when our children are ready to be turned loose into the world, and we do that because we don't want the burden of raising our children, and then we turn out all these immature, dysfunctional children into society, and you know, either they're right back home on your couch or they in somebody's prison system. And we have to look at the reasons why. We invest in everything
mm-hmm.
except ourselves.
That's right.
Except our babies. And that's why I'm talking about our economic condition, because it's America in itself is a joke. Excuse me. If the Queen of England is running out of money, you know America is broke.
Sure.
So all of these false promises of being able to have a promising career coming out of, you know, these institutions of learning, that's a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They got rocket scientists working at Jack in the Box now.
Yeah. It's
you know, that's real. Excuse me, that's real.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really want us to really think about our condition. And, you know, when I do these talk shows, it's always my prayer that we reach somebody. And when you get off, you know, I really thank you for listening. I really do. I appreciate it so much. But I really want you to think. And I really want you to go back and look at your community and look and check yourself. That's where it starts. It starts with us. I'm not criticizing anybody who's ever bought their children Nikes. I am an adamant fan of Michael Jordan. I have bought my children Nikes, but not at the expense of their education, not at the expense of, you know, the essential things in life. I'm not working overtime and double time to buy them no tennis shoes. If I had it, you got it, and if I don't, you can live without it. You know, but in the time that we are in now, we really have to start doing something for ourselves. And I want to tell people, if you got a job, all praise is due to Allah, but you need to start planning to do something for yourself. White people plan 100 years in advance, and when it all goes belly up, they're going to be set. And we're going to be the ones struggling and not knowing where to go. So, of course, I want to encourage the 3-year economic blueprint, but I want you to start looking at some things for yourself and really look at this economy and look at the stage of our people and where we are, especially in economics. Look at where we are. Go online. Look at the real estate. Look at how much land, how much property we own versus, you know, the population of the United States, and we are 40 million plus. And we don't own 30% of the real estate in America. That is a hell of a condition. Okay, I'm going to move on because time is moving on. I want to talk about, I think we've already really touched on education and a little bit on socialization. And what I really want to get on, and Brother Reginald, are you still with us?
Sir, yes. I mean, ma'am, yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I really want to engage everybody, and people don't really understand the dietary restrictions. But
okay.
I don't know about you all, but what I have noticed lately, because I don't go to the grocery store often, by the grace of Allah, I stay down the street from an organic farm because I'm in the country. And what they do is that if you go and pick your own food, they give you this big discount, you know, so you can go back there and pick your cabbages, your radishes, your carrots, whatever it is you desire. And it's an organic farm, and they give you this discount if you pick it, and it's a little more if you don't pick it. But going to the grocery store, there are just very little things that I buy. But I happened to go to the store the other day, and this is real talk. One of the ladies who was in the store, she was complaining because there was no particular cut of chicken that she wanted or something like that. And she was asking the butcher or whoever that, you know, well, you know, I've been coming here for a couple of weeks and you all haven't had it. And she said, well, this is all we have. And so I made a comment to her. I said, it looks like America is running out of food. And it didn't dawn on me what I said until, you know, later on. And, you know, the dietary law that was given to us by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is really life-saving, because in those critical times, we're going to have to learn how to cut our meals. We're going to have to learn how to fast. You know, sometimes it doesn't have anything to do with spirituality or religion. Sometimes it has to do with the economy. And so when you're used to eating 3 meals a day, which is very harsh on your digestive system, that's a lot of money and a lot of food. And so there are a lot of things that we need to get prepared for when it comes to the changing of our diet. But what I really want to speak on is the food consumption and how it impacts our behavior. Because the trichina worm, which is the worm that's commonly found in pork, is now more often than ever being found in the human body in vital organ areas, like the brain, behind the eyes. Somebody had one that had grew tremendously large within their sinus cavity. These, and I'm not trying to tell people about their culture or religion. I'm just telling you actual facts. that we have to be very careful what we eat because it has a profound effect on your behavior. Because a bad diet, if you believe it or not, will create a kind of temperament in you that is not favorable to you and have you acting out in ways that you wouldn't usually act out. And that is the truth. And I'm saying all that to say, you know, don't give them a reason to incarcerate us. They already have it. We're black. They're already using it. So we have to really look at and examine the things that make our people act outrageous. If you notice, people are doing more outrageous, crazy things. And I'm like, you know, black people don't get down like that. It's in the food. All of that processed food, all that fake food, all that plastic food. I'm serious, people. It's called chemical warfare. And the things that they ship to your community market, go to the white folks' community market. The meat is pinker. You know, it's totally different from what they're feeding themselves. And I'm very serious about that. It's called chemical warfare. And as they are running out of food to feed America, they are using all these genetically experimentation type foods, and it's killing us and making us act irate. And when we act irate, they classify us as crazy. That gives them a reason to shoot us, incarcerate us. And nobody seems to be getting it. So I'm going to go with Brother Reginald on this. Brother Reginald, you want to share something with us about the dietary laws?
Ma'am, yes, ma'am. I would like to chime in on it, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to chime in on the dietary laws. First, let me just say the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, who I thank Allah for every single day, he gave us two books, Eat to Live 1 and Eat to Live 2. In these books, he laid out recipes, he laid out the purpose of fasting. He laid out foods that are prohibited, and he laid out how many times we should eat. So for all of us who really believe in the Caucasian method, that we need to eat 3 meals a day, every day, that is not wise at all. I mean, if you really want to look at an example, go back to the days of the Scripture. Let's go all the way back to the Old Testament. During the Hebrew-Israelite time. Let's go back then. But those people, men and messengers and women, they didn't live to 60 and 70 years. That's just a baby. That's like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, that's baby age. They were living 150, 200, 250 years old, 1,000 years old, even Methuselah. In fact, they didn't even die until they were through with this life and they asked to pass on a transition. Well, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said in one of his lectures that when he was in the nation growing up, they hardly ever went to a funeral. Why is this? Because they were eating to live. They were growing their own food. Like Brother Andre Muhammad said earlier, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he had his own fish import. He had his own restaurant, his own grocery stores. So don't say we can't economically do it, because we economically have to do it, because if not, like Sister Queen Aziza Beloved said, we will continue to eat what they give up. So suffice it all to say, what if we, like I was asked the other day, well, what are we supposed to do? I mean, we can't go and we're not growing our own food right now. We don't have our animals. We don't have our own land. Well, guess what? That means that you're going to have to go back to what the people in the days of the early ancient days of the Bible ate. They ate fruit, they ate vegetables, and they ate wild honey, dates, and some nuts. And that sustained them. And you eat once a day, and when you get good at eating once a day, then you eat one meal every other day. And then when you get good at eating one meal every other day, then you eat one meal every 3 days and see if that can sustain you. And before you know it, you'll end up saying, wow, I'm getting stronger, not just physically, but spiritually, mentally, and morally, because your body won't be putting in the extra work to get rid of all those toxins that is produced from these chemicals that are put into our food, and specifically the animals that are being tortured before they even go to the slaughterhouse, that are being tortured with antibiotics, steroids. Look at our children. Our children are getting reproductive organs at an age younger than ever. Young women are getting their menses at 8, 9, and 10. We're feeding our children this Similac when we're supposed to be breastfeeding our children. And if you're too embarrassed to breastfeed, then go buy you a breast pump and feed your children good milk, because that milk from the breast is better than any Similac that anybody can ever sell you. So, yes, we got to learn how to eat for proper. We got to change our dietary laws, because it gives you power. It lets the spirit work on your body. And not only that, but we are sun people. The original black man and woman, we are people of the sun. The sun is a food source. If you look in the sun and gaze into it and be amazed at it, it can nourish you. And I want you to try it. If you don't believe it, you can take it up for a bed. Go outside and start looking up in the sun for about 30 minutes to an hour a day. And watch, you'll find out that your appetite leaves you. You'll learn how to eat one meal a day in the evening time instead of eating breakfast. And family, this is the last thing I'm going to say. Leave the swine flesh alone. There is no religion, there is no faith persuasion that lets you or asks you to eat the pig. That is an animal, according to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad through and to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that is a cloned animal made from the cat, the rat, and the dog. Jesus, the Christians say, well, Jesus came and fulfilled that. Well, if Jesus fulfilled it, why would he call the demons to enter into the swine flesh when they ask for a respite and say, you were persecuting us too soon, and the swine flesh jumped off the mountain? Why do you think that God forbid us Hebrew Israelites for even touching the carcass of a swine? And in fact, that is one of the laws and commandments: thou should not eat the swine flesh. Why do you think Allah warned the Muslims against eating the swine flesh? Don't even touch its dead carcass. So it creates, if you don't want to be religious, it creates high blood pressure for black people. Mm-hmm. So leave the swine flesh alone, and that will decrease at least 50% of your illnesses right now. Because I was just looking at an article, and the flu is a widespread epidemic, whether it is being posted on media or not. In New York, it is critical. The flu is critical and is being spread, and the Caucasian is the number one spreader of diseases. So if you are eating improperly, just like the Indians had to suffer, and not the red Indian, but the black Indian had to suffer from the diseases that the red Indians brought over here through the Bering Strait, and the Caucasians brought all these diseases over here to us, and then started telling us to eat the wrong foods. Well, look, if you eat the right foods, you can avoid having a cold every 3 or 4 months. Eat the right foods and eat properly the right time so we can be physical. Because it's a war about to happen. And if you're not physically strong, Allah, God, Jah, Elohim, they can't use you. Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikumsalam. Thank you. Okay. And I'm sorry. We're going to have to move real quickly. I just want to talk about a couple of other things. And Brother O'Rell, I want to come back to you, sir. And I want to talk to you about faith. And how, in your opinion, can we get past some of, how can I put it, the barriers that have been formed when we look at religion? Myself as a Muslim, it's easy for me to say that Islam is the only way and have an understanding or more in-depth understanding of what that means to me. But here we have Hebrew Israelites. Here we have Moors. Here we have Christians. Here we have, you know, Buddhists, whatever the religions may be. And we have to get past that barrier, because no matter how we worship Allah, when this government, this society, who is contrary to Allah, looks at us, they're not stopping asking, are we Muslim? They just see that we're black. And we all are suffering the same plight. We all are being victimized the same way. I'm so sure that George Zimmerman did not ask Trayvon Martin, are you Muslim? Are you a Christian? Before he shot him down. I'm so sure that that man did not ask Jordan Davis, what is your religious background, before I blow your brains out. And I'm so sure that the Ku Klux Klan did not ask all of those people that they strung up, what is your religion, before I hang you. And they didn't ask Emmett Till what God he served when they killed him. And they didn't ask Jesse Washington when they burned him alive, what religion was he. But I'm pretty sure if you look throughout the time, all of the religions at some point, or practices of faith is what I call them, were different, but it didn't matter. And that's the point we have to get past. We have to knock down the walls of the church and knock down the walls of the mosque and knock down the walls of the masjid and open it up and say, this is for our people. So, Brother Aurel, tell me your best opinion. How can we get past those barriers of what we call faith and religion?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I can speak from personal experience and my understanding of what religion and faith is. And as a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I can see the commonality between all in religion that deals with black people. I consider myself a Hebrew Israelite. You know, I consider myself a Moor. I consider myself a Kemetologist. I consider myself these things because I am that I am. And once we have supreme wisdom, we can realize that there are more things that we have in common than more things that we have that are different. We may have differences in opinion about certain things, but we have to realize is that all of us are human beings, which means that we were blessed and we were born with the gift of perception. Two people can look at one car wreck and see two different things. If Allah God, Yahweh, or what Elohim, whatever you want to call him, wanted for everyone to view everything the same way, then he would have just created us like that. But he didn't. He allowed us to have our own perception of reality. And we have to realize that you may be saying 1 + 3 = 4. I may be saying 2 + 2 = 4. Another person may be saying 4 + 0 = 4. We all saying the same thing. We're going a different route to get there, but we all are saying the same thing. And I think that if we just put our biases aside, we put our emotions aside, and we sat down and we just had an intellectual discourse, just sat down, and instead of trying to bicker and argue with each other about who's right and who's wrong, if we just sat down and we tried to find
ways that we or things that we agree on, we will come out feeling very, very enlightened. We will feel as though that the burden is off of our shoulders. We will start to see each other as brothers instead of each other as enemies. So I think that is definitely important for one, us to be able to have a better understanding about what other people believe, because I feel that that's one of the number one things that causes a difference, that causes us to bicker amongst each other, is one party does not have a proper understanding about what the other party believes. And I watch a lot of YouTube videos, I watch a lot of debates, but everyone is saying, well, their way is right and everything else is wrong. But see, that's very ignorant. Maybe everyone has an aspect of truth, but yet you're not realizing that that other person, they just have a different perception of the truth, even though that's the same thing that what you believe, but you all just perceive it differently. And so I see that just based on me conversing with a lot of people, me dialoguing with a lot of people, that people, after I speak with people, I see that after they finish talking to me, they say, wow, I didn't even know that you all believed that. I didn't even know that you all understood that. I thought that you all thought something differently. See, but because we have these preconceived notions about what other people believe, and we never actually put ourselves or undergone the actual critical analysis of what other people believe and cause ourselves to be able to better understand it due to us putting our biases aside and looking at the information based on what it is. And so that's one of the critical ways that we can put out, that we can crash these and we can destroy these barriers and we can move forward. We need to stop trying to just simply judge other people's belief systems just because it's different than ours. There are many different cultures, hundreds or maybe thousands of different cultures, people that do not believe the same thing that you believe. But does that mean that everything that you believe is absolutely correct just because you believe it? We have to really think about the way we think about things. And that's one of the things that I've seen that people don't do. They do not think about how they think about the outside world. They think that everything that they have is what it is, and nothing else around them is truth. We have to get out of that mindset. So we definitely have to apply ourselves. We definitely have to get to understand what else you believe, like my Hebrew brothers and sisters. I can speak on that. I consider myself a Hebrew Israelite. I see many of my Hebrew Israelite brothers attacking Islam. And then I may ask them, brother, what does, I asked one brother on Facebook, him and I, we got into a debate or whatever, but he asked me, I said, brother, what does the term Muslim mean? He couldn't even tell me. I said, so what does Islam mean? He couldn't tell me. So I said, you can't even tell me the basics, but yet you're telling me that Islam is a false religion. You haven't even studied Islam, but yet you're claiming that what you have is the truth. We have to get out of that mindset, because that mindset is causing wars amongst original people, and it is. So I would definitely say that we must study and get to understand what other people believe, and so we can be able to dialogue with our people, talk to our people, and better relate to our people. And that's how we create unity amongst each other, is by studying what we believe and showing them that you understand what they believe and you agree with what they believe. You may have a few differences, but you still tell them, I may think something differently, slightly, but for the most part, we agree on this. And let's settle on what we agree on and not on what we disagree on. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow,
can I add something
to that?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to apologize to you on behalf of the Hebrew Israelites if, you know, for that brother disrespecting you.
Yes.
I don't want you getting the impression that all Hebrew Israelites are like that. You know, because I know people look at the Hebrew Israelites as a cult, you know, with the YouTube videos, with ISUPK and GMS teaching, twisting the scriptures, making us look like a cult, making us look like we have this angry black people out here attacking people that's walking the streets. I don't want anybody on this panel thinking all of us are angry black men and women out attacking people, because we already get that reputation. You know, like the scripture said, all Israel ain't Israel. Yeah, all Muslims are not true Muslims. So I don't want nobody thinking all Israelites, oh, well, they're angry people. They always attacking everybody, because we already get some get that reputation. You know, we're labeled as bigots and all of this. So I just had to say that.
Yes, ma'am, and I really appreciate that. But, you know, I've dialogued with quite a few Hebrew Israelites, and I know that every Hebrew Israelite is not like that.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I have a few Hebrew Israelite brethren as my Facebook friends who I talk to all the time, and we share information with each other.
Okay.
You know, we don't fight, bitch, and argue. We actually dialogue and discourse, and, you know, and we agree on many things. And we settle on that. We call each other Aki and things like that. So, no, I do not think that most Hebrews like that, beloved.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And anyone else who wants to comment on that before we close out? Brother Andre? Reaching across the aisles of faith.
Yes, ma'am. I just, you know, the only thing that I would add to, you know, what the brother said is that in the Holy Quran it speaks about the Jews and the Christians and the Sabians and those who believe in Allah all have the reward from him. And just like the brother, you know, so profoundly stated, is that we have to get beyond the division and come together as one, because now it's time for us to, you know, get away from all of the excuses. Or Hebrew Israelite, or I'm a Jew, or I'm a Christian. You know, all of this is just a way that the enemy has used against us for so long. And even with that, even with religion, he has caused us to be divided amongst ourselves and caused us to hate one another because we are such, or we believe a certain way. And that's not good. You know, Allah doesn't, he shows mercy to all. He doesn't keep his mercy from you know, gives it to just one person or one people.
Direct right there.
You know, so everything is there. He uses his mercy for all, even with the sun, which is a sign of freedom. The sun is the master of germination for all the seeds. It is a source of good for our eyesight, as Brother Reginald had said earlier. You know, it contains vitamin C. You know, it whitens your eyes when you look at it. You know, all of these things come. Everything in creation serves a purpose. And even with our so-called belief or faith, it serves a purpose. And it's not just something that we utilize as a title, or it shouldn't be, but it is something that we should utilize to gain or draw us closer to one another as a people and God. That's the ultimate purpose. It should serve for us, because all of these titles is nothing. The best title to have, according to Allah in the Quran, is Muslim. And when I say that, Muslim is just one who submits his will to Allah. That's it. It doesn't have anything that's, well, Muslim is better. No, Muslim is just one who submits his will entirely to Allah. And the messenger, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that, you know, a good Muslim is a good Christian. And a good Christian is a good Muslim. And that serves its purpose for everybody. So we're not just talking about specific religion here. We're speaking about all of us as a people, as a nation. And once we get to that point, I think the religious ideologies and concepts that we utilize as a title will change, and it should, you know, because this is what the minister is bringing us back to. He's bringing us back to that according to the way he's teaching us, and that we should get past of our differences, even if there were, even if somebody we had a difference with was different or differentiated with us because of a certain thing. Let it go. These immature ideologies and things that we have is causing us to be divided, and we have to get beyond that. So that's the only thing that I would add to that, sister. Thank you for letting me share.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And Brother Jungle, are you still with us?
All right. My take on that, my humble belief, I would say, first of all, I always look at when I speak to people, especially over here, I need the Christianity belief, which I have nothing against, because you need something to hold on to in order to make it to another day. First of all, belief is something that you don't know. You're not sure about. So anyone that speaks on a belief, no one can be wrong, no one can be right. That's just an opinion. That's just a belief. As we know, faith is faith is the object of things hoped for, which in faith is a material thing. So it's not a spook or something that you just going to hope to happen, but it's something material. So you could have faith and get in a car, but the evidence of things unseen. You could save up $100 a week, that's your evidence, to the $10,000 maybe the car may cost. It's unseen because you don't save the $10,000. When you get the $10,000, then you move into experience or you move into truth. The goal is to get into truth. That's why Christ said, or Jesus said, the truth will set you free, which is the truth on Elijah Muhammad came to bring. And on Elijah also stated that anything that you speak about is a theory until proven. And if it's a theory, nobody's right, nobody's wrong. That's why you have a lot of argument. A lot of people is going to disagree because everyone is moving in. Most everyone, that is arguing, is moving in theory. Once you move in theory, you would never have a situation where you're not going to argue. Or if you move in belief, or you move in faith, because you go faith in building a house and never finish. But when you finish, you're not in belief no more. You're not in faith no more. You are in experience or you are in truth. And once you're not in truth or experience, y'all are just in the sea, just traveling, you know where you're going. Because it's just a belief, it's just a theory, and it's just a faith. So to me, in my humble opinion, the truth is the set point and what matters. Anything else, you're going to argue. Of course, you're not going to get nowhere because everyone has their own personal belief. Like I heard the brother spoke about the Hebrew Israelite. He was working in belief. And sister, I'm not saying that he's being, you know, erratic and that's the fit of the Hebrew Israelite. But because he's working on belief without actually going into details and checking out what Islam is about or what Muslim about, because if he did, he would never say what he said. Because, you know, if you understand what Islam is, that's the same ideology of Hebrew Israelite. They believe in one God. It's no different. But most people just jump and think it's a girl like me. When I first heard about it, I thought that's the word, like a Muslim. Like, what's this? I was upset when someone brought that to my attention. I was ready to say some words they shouldn't say. So what I did, I'm a very skeptical person. I say to myself, I done went to Christianity. I done went to, like Elijah said, when all fails, come to Islam, which pretty much the part I took unknowingly what I was getting myself into. And I try to see if what is said by Elijah Muhammad is true or not. And every time I do my research to see if he's correct or not, it being proven that everything he said is correct. Some of it blows my mind because some of the things that he has said is amazing. And I'm like, wow, every time I look into it, it is true. I mean, there's still a lot more things I'm still looking into. But so far, I can't say nothing Elijah Muhammad is on point. Obviously, Masrur Muhammad is on point. And whoever is underneath the leadership, and it is real. But the point is they're working on truth. They're not working on faith. They're not working on belief. They're not working on theory.
Hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely, I agree. Okay, and Brother Reginald, anything you want to add?
No, ma'am. The brothers really covered it really good. You know, we just got to unite, people. We got to unite because we have a common enemy, and that's Satan. And that's Satan, and not just the white Caucasian Satan, because we really can't use him as an excuse anymore. Time is gone with using the Caucasian as an excuse for our problems and our issues, when we can solve our own problems and our issues together by this one simple thing, and that's uniting. Uniting, going across all aisles of faith persuasion, going out being saviors, going out teaching the truth. The Hebrew, they're like the sister said, there are Hebrew Israelites. One bad Hebrew Israelites don't speak for all. One bad Christian don't speak for all. One bad Muslim don't speak for all. One bad Jew don't speak for all. One bad person in the conscious community don't speak for all. So what we got to realize is we have to make a common thread with those of us who are dedicated to this truth, who are speaking this truth and trying to get our youth, which is the most important principle, the most important underlying factor in all of this, is to save our babies, man. Because they are being miseducated, like the brother spoke about earlier, and so beautifully in depth. We got to get our babies from this criminal enterprise called education and begin to educate our children with truth so that they can go ahead and continue the fight of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man and woman, the original makers and owners of the planet Earth. Assalamu alaikum.
Sister
Corinne.
Wow, Sister Corinne, I want to add towards what I was saying. When I say truth, then you have a listening audience to verify some things, what I'm saying. As I'm Elijah, I'm a teacher. God is nature. And to nature, everything could be uncovered or revealed. Like, example, most of the time when they do speak about the black man being first, and the white man came to us, most example what I use is a polar bear. Being in the condition it in, to nature, for it to live, to swim in our ice cold, the catfish, it needs a thick skin, and fur. So nature provides that. So if the sun is there, no housing, nothing to protect them from the sun ray, nature will provide melanin, which absorbs the sun rays, produce vitamin D, which actually is a harmonized thing that harmonizes the black man. So by nature, the black man is harmonized to vitamin D that we get naturally from the sun rays. Also, we turn into calcium, which actually strengthens your bone. So by nature, we upright, strong human beings to survive whatever the climate it is. So to nature, that will show that the black man at first versus if the pale man, which is weak-boned, mine, the blue eye, was first, they don't have that efficient melanin as the aboriginal human has, they would definitely die and perish because they cannot absorb the sun rays or sustain that radiation as the aboriginal man would be. So the truth in that would be used nature to show that they came first, because if the white man they came first, they would be extinct, would be no humans on earth.
Thank you for sharing that with us, brother. Thank you. And we have someone else who's, I don't know how long he's been on. I don't think it's been that long. Brother Kareem, assalamu alaikum. Oh, okay, we just lost him. Okay, his phone dropped. Okay, maybe he wanted to say something, maybe not. Well, we are out of time. I just want to, I didn't really get to unity and support in our future, but I just want to leave y'all with this. You know, I really wanted our listening audience, which a lot of them are of the Christian persuasion. Of course, we have a lot of believers and Moors and things like that, but most of my listening audience are Christians, and I think, you know, they're just just trying to understand our point of view. And I just want people to understand that the road to freedom, justice, and equality is unity. And we're going to have to put aside those petty, petty, sorry differences that the Caucasian race has established within us. We have to put those things aside in order to be strong as a people. That is the key to us having a future of freedom. That is the only way that we're going to get through this. And how we start is by supporting one another. We have to start supporting one another. I just want everybody to commit. If it's just one, just start shopping at one black-owned business. Start patronizing just one black-owned business to support our own. You know, take a day and teach your children about their history, the true history. You know, just take a day. Cut the television off, cut the radio off, take the iPod, take the, you know, the PlayStation, whatever, and really invest time in our future and in our children and unify with those in your community. You don't have to start off big. Start on your block. Get to know your neighbors and unify with our people, because that is the only way we're going to survive. So I want to thank all my guests, Sister Andre, Brother Aurel, Sister Latoya, Brother Jungle, Brother Reginald, of course, always.
Thank you
so very much for joining us tonight. And inshallah, Sister Yatira, who will be back next week, we're going to give her a surprise because her and Brother Frank got engaged, so she's shopping for her wedding dress today. So, of course, we're going to be back here next week on Young, Gifted, and Black, giving her well wishes for the union of her and Brother Frank. I'm so proud of her and all the work that she's done, and now she's about to be a bride. And I feel like crying because I feel like that's my daughter. I'm giving her away, so we're going to be back next Saturday for that. And, of course, join us tomorrow. Brother Reginald is going to teach on the Valley of the Dry Bones, the continuation of, so I guess that will be part three, Brother Reginald, of that. Of course, using excerpts from the minister's speech, and we're going to be reviewing Ezekiel 37 as well as Surah 47. Of the Holy Quran. And on Monday, join us for Conscious Black Nation, where Brother Kareem's topic at 8 p.m. on Monday will be There Is No Mystery God. And on Tuesday at 8 p.m., join us. We're going to have another rebroadcast. Brother Jihad is so close to coming home, so we're going to have another rebroadcast for him. He is doing remarkably well, recovering absolutely well, getting up, walking, doing everything, going about his business, just a little more recovery in order for him to get home. But all praise is due to Allah. Our dear brother had a massive brain aneurysm, and he had a 5 to 10% chance of survival per the doctors, but Allah said different. And so our brother is making an almost full recovery. He's on his way home. And on 7 o'clock on Wednesday, join us for DJ Black Caesar and Friends. At 8 o'clock, I'll be right back here with my topic on Thursday night, the heart of Farrakhan. And so please join us for that. We're going to talk to some of those who are closest to the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan, and let's get a real look at who he is and how he is. A lot of us don't know him personally, but those who do will be here with me on Thursday to share. And on Friday, join us with Student Minister James Muhammad with our live study group, Put on the New Man. And, of course, he will be talking about the Savior's Day speech and some specifics from that. And, of course, like I said, next Saturday we're going to honor our dear sister and Brother Frank, congratulate them on their engagement, and, of course, we're going to be getting into some relationship stuff. So join us next Saturday as well. So thank you all for listening. May Allah continue to bless us all with the light of understanding as we leave, as we came before you, in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Well, thank you, Queen.
Well, thank you, Queen.